John Morosi, our baseball insider at MLB Network and Fox Sports. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, and you are absolutely correct. It was a very, very busy evening in the national pastime, and I would say that certainly Osuna's save was a blown save was one of the big topics, but many, many things out there right now.
John, it's enough for me. I mean, it's enough for me to where I think Ross Atkins, if John Gibbons or DeMarlo Hale don't feel fit to take Osuna, like, it's almost a, you know, I don't want to use the phrase mercy killing, but you're being merciful towards him by getting him out of this role right now and resetting where he is, who he is, what he can do going into next year. And he's my closer next year no matter what. But John, I think we agree, right? If they were a contender, he already wouldn't be closing games. So you still have to tell everyone else, including the other 24 players, you care enough to get him out of there. That's where I'm at. I want to know where you are.
Yes, and I think that a couple things. I agree with you that for now you have to look at him as your closer next year. I don't know that moving him back to the rotation is the answer. You know, he's, of course, part of this season is that he's had some, at least early on in the year, there were still some health concerns with his throwing arm, so I think that raises a different question of could he even withstand being a starting pitcher at this point in time from a physical standpoint. It's interesting. You look at the metrics, and sometimes some metrics tell the story, sometimes they don't, but his fielding independent pitching this year, which obviously just measures those things that a pitcher can most control and really kind of drills down on the exact effectiveness of just batter to batter, how he has done, has been the best of his career, oddly enough. 1.83 FIP, which tells you that basically his ERA should be down in that area. Instead, it's up around 3.66. So that tells you that he's either been unlucky or that in key moments he has been unable to execute pitches, or some combination thereof. I think there is still a lot to work with there. He came back from battling the anxiety and really had some good stretches still in the second half of this year where he's had a couple of really good periods still. So I would lean toward keeping Osuna in the closing role entering 2018, but I understand sort of the trepidation based on, as you point out, just a really, really high number of blown saves that does give the Jays, I'm sure, a lot of pause right now.
The perfect example last night, I mean, the things that you point out, and there was a little bit of everything. There was bad luck. There was inability to execute pitches. Let's look at it, right? He walks the batter lead off an inning. That's never a good thing. Then a double sneaks in down the line. You got second and third. You can still get out of the inning, but you don't make a play at the plate. You let the tying run get to third base. Josh Donaldson's decision to throw to first, you almost are able with the infield in to make the play, and yet it spins the second baseman around. So it was a bit of everything in last night's blown save, but there's 10 of them now.
Right. No, that's very true. And this is why this is such a interesting topic to discuss and why it's been so confounding for the Jays all season long, because again, you look for ways to explain what's happening. Why does this continue to occur with the blown saves? And then you look at the numbers and say, well, his strikeouts to walks, which is usually that's usually a pretty telling number for a relief pitcher, where if that ratio all of a sudden gets out of whack, then you start to wonder, oh, okay, is the stuff not as effective as it used to be? Is he just playing wild? Well, in this case, his strikeouts to walk ratio is the best of his career. His walk rate, in terms of walks per nine, also the best of his career. So you're looking for signs of concern there and things that tell you he may be losing his stuff or kind of losing his ability to navigate those tense situations in the ninth inning. And the numbers indicate that's not the case. So it really is, I think, one of the many, I'm not going to call it an anomaly because clearly it's happened 10 times, so it's not an anomaly, but it is one of the many confounding aspects of this Blue Jays season where I think that the totality of the picture indicates to you he still can do this job more often than not. And I think it's, I'm sure it's been a long year for him in many respects, but he's also been an all-star this year. So I think you have to look at that in its totality and say, right now he is still the Jays' best option to close in 2018. And I do think the somewhat mysterious nature of the struggles this year, looking at the numbers, will make it also difficult to trade him, difficult to, I think, place him in a different spot on the team. So I think I agree with you, Greg, that really, to me, he has to be your closer entering 2018.
8:11, John Morosi joining us on Brady and Price starting lineup. You can watch Jays Red Sox from Fenway as they'll play yet another nine innings. They played twice that and more last night. 7 o'clock, Sports at 5.9 The Fan. You can also see a great wild card battle, actually. Twins at Rays at the Trop, 1 o'clock on Sportsnet. Let me slide and ask you about the Verlander trade. We had Casey Stern on last week from MLB Radio. He says he doesn't think this trade gets made without the hurricane happening and the feeling in Houston. He said, and I know Astros players were, you know, barbecuing management for not making a deal, you know, sort of privately, sort of publicly on July 31st. Did this whole confluence of events get Justin Verlander in an Astros uniform?
I think so, Greg. And the impact of the hurricane, I think it was maybe on the list of those concerns. Jim Crane, actually, the owner of the Astros, said publicly that initially when the Astros discussed the trade with Verlander, that he was concerned about the hurricane, that he was worried about effectively just the livability and how everything was going to be in Houston over the next couple months when he had to make the decision. But Crane assured him that that obviously vast areas of the city remain very livable and very, very normal at this point in time. So I think that was the inspirational element of the story may have played some role. And in fact, I do think that the overriding situation for Verlander was the Upton trade earlier in the day. And in fact, he told Bob Nightingale that just this week, that having the Upton trade earlier in the day with Justin Upton going to the Angels really drove home for Verlander, this is going to be a rebuild. And at this stage of his career, given everything he's accomplished, he did not want to be part of a rebuild. And I think that was the number one reason why he said yes. If it had been Chicago, if it had been Los Angeles, he may have said yes more quickly based on his preferences to play there. But once he had a chance to play for a young, exciting, winning team with some interesting personalities, and obviously now, Greg, to your question, a real charter to do something special for an American city that's going through a really difficult tragedy at the moment. I think Verlander understands the gravity of it. And of course, last night he goes out there and pitches extremely well, and the Astros win a ball game in Seattle. And by the way, they have not lost a game since Verlander came to the team and since they returned to Houston after the hurricane. So this does appear to me, Greg, to be a team on a mission, and Verlander is now a big part of it, and he has, I believe, lifted up the mentality and the spirits of this clubhouse, where they were, if you look at them in early August, they were really struggling, they were upset, they were disappointed at the lack of a major move. Now that they've made this move, they have been re-energized, and they have not lost a game. So I really think that those two things are very much related, and you're now seeing a team playing on an emotional high, whereas now they'll probably, we assume, encounter the Indians in the playoffs at some point in time, and they are now playing, as Elliot pointed out earlier, about as hot as any team in baseball at the moment. So the American League playoffs have gotten a lot more interesting just in the last 10 days.
With John Morosi, our insider, MLB Network and Fox Sports, there's no doubt the biggest topic of conversation yesterday was the cheating Red Sox, who have been relaying signs because of Apple Watches and stuff like that. And it seems to me, while they're probably going to get fined, maybe even significantly, that most baseball people are just bemused by this.
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. I think there is some level of frustration towards the Red Sox. And what we don't know, of course, Elliot, is how many other teams are doing the same thing. This was a very unique case in that it was brought to the attention of the commissioner. And interestingly, Dave Dombrowski, the Red Sox president of baseball operations, said yesterday that when there are sign-stealing allegations, sometimes they'll be handled GM to GM and never even reach the commissioner's office. Of course, this is the Red Sox and the Yankees, so it's a little different. And it did come to the attention of the commissioner. To me, there is going to be, I think, some level of concern in the industry, because you're now taking a time-honored practice of sign stealing and you are putting it into the new age. You are doing it with tools that did not exist. I'm quite sure that as much as there is part of folklore in baseball that there was sign stealing going on at the Polo Grounds in 1951, I do not think that the individual with the binoculars was wearing an Apple Watch at the Polo Grounds. I think I can safely confirm the Apple Watch was invented in 2015. There were no Apple Watches at the Polo Grounds. So I do think that it's important for baseball to send a very clear message here. The Red Sox have admitted exactly what they were doing. So they have been very forthcoming in the process. They should be penalized.
But John, it's the relaying of the information that has gotten faster. It's not the discerning of the information. They're still figuring it out the same way. Don't be so stupid and get figured out.
Right. Well, and again, this is where and Manfred made this comment. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, made the comment yesterday that there is no rule in the book about sign stealing, which is why if you look back at the again, I'll use the Polo Grounds analogy, there was never any sort of judgment or action against the New York Giants at that time. But there are very specific rules about electronic communication in the dugout. Now, baseball did allow, at the start of the 2016 season, iPad pros there. There is scouting information there on those iPads, but those are not to be used to transmit scouting information to the playing field. They are used in the same way that you see them on an NFL sideline to catalog and digest and consume scouting information about things that have occurred in the past in the dugout after a player's at bat and before the next one, not for the purpose of affecting the play on the field. And the commissioner did say, notably, though I should make sure I point this out, that there is no precedent, and you really don't, based on the way he answered the question, you don't get the sense he is planning on vacating wins or anything dramatic in that way. He does not want to do that. But I do think, Elliot, to your point, we'll probably see whether it's a fine, whether it's a loss of a draft pick. I think we will see some action taken here, but it is not going to be the kind that affects, I believe, the standings of the 2017 AL East race.